i januar eller 2 måneder, men jeg ved det så.
Alright. Now, I have, we was at the midst of other questions last time, but I'll start with entirely new subject, because it occurred to me that I never asked you about him, and I think I ought to do it now. I mean, what were your relations with Yigal Alon?
Of no possible interest. I'll tell you. Yeah. Of no interest whatever. Perfectly good. Always perfectly happy. I met him in Ginosar. In, I suppose, can't tell you exactly when, but I should guess, either in 47 or in somewhere like, when was I there again? When was I in Israel again? Must have been in maybe the summer of 51, something like that. Teddy Kolik introduced us.
Teddy, not
Yitzhak? No, no. Yitzhak said nothing whatever about him. I talked to Yitzhak today about him, he had no interest in him, whatever. That's by the way. I know that he was his patron, there are photographs of him with the shoulder. No, he wouldn't talk about him. I can't tell you why, but he didn't. No, no, Yitzhak Sadeh never talked to him about anybody in Israel. That's a separate chapter. No. No, Yitzhak Sadeh,
England, he had a letter of introduction to you from somebody.
So I had met him. I met him already.
Yes. You see? You met him before in Israel.
I met him in Ginosar. And he made a very good impression on me. And I talked to him about his father and about the Rothschild colonies. And he explained to me how they were run by Gottlieb and by his predecessors. And I remember coming back to London in 19, probably, I don't know what, end of 51, may have been end of 52. And I told Jimmy Rothschild that if he wants to generate communists in Israel, there is no better machine for producing communists than Rothschild colonies. I said that. I said, no, not he. But I said to Jimmy Rothschild that if he wants to produce left-wing people who are very indignant and anti-capitalist kind, the Rothschild colonies are a superb machine for generating such people.
When did you say it to Jimmy?
Probably about 52, maybe 51, maybe 48. I don't know. Yeah. After I met Yigal Alon, on the strength of it, I said his name is Bakovich. His father was badly treated, as always, by the Baron's agents. May not have been Gottlieb, may have been his predecessor, however he was, and that on the whole, Jimmy didn't like it at all. But I told him that again and again. I said, that was before the Pika had been given up. So, you'll probably know the date of that. When would that have been? When did Pika go? When you have the state? Well, all right. The state is created in 48. When did he give up Pika?
In the early 50s. It took time. It took some time.
I know it wasn't immediate.
It took few years.
Yes, he terribly wanted to get back the colonies in Syria. And he thought that Spears, of all people, would help him. Because he knew Spears. The friend of Spears was a raging anti-Semite of Jewish origin, everybody thought. His name was Speyer, grandson and son of a Jewish moneylender in Belgium. Duff Cooper told me. I didn't get through.
It's
Spears, I know. But my point is that Duff Cooper assured me that he was a son of a man called Speyer from Belgium. I don't think that's true. It's a good idea.
But it's believed all over.
That he was Jew of Jewish origin.
Yes, people tell it from Azaz.
I met him. He's a horrible man. Horrible man.
He caused a lot of trouble to English.
I know. In Lebanon. Don't I know. Yes. Spears on his forehead, spears on his toes. He's so is trouble wherever he goes. Michael Wright repeated that to me. Of all people. Anyway, no, he was wildly unpopular.
But the point was
that he was a protege, of Churchill, exactly. He was a member of the other club. I'm sure Jimmy Churchill, Beaverbrook, Effie Smith, that was the world. Anyway, I've seen him, I saw him. Amory, he was a friend of. Now, I probably said that to Jimmy in the late 40s, maybe, early 50s. He always used to inquire, but why do you think this? I used to explain to him that there's nothing more awful than when the parents shed tears, the children shed blood, and that he is the originator. Well, the Rothschild organization originates this. I never repeated this to Dolly, as you can imagine, and not even to Jacob, though I could. Jacob will take it quite calmly, so Victor even, but Jimmy, of course, was responsible. And then, I can't remember how I got interested in this. The process, I don't know. I knew that he wanted to. He certainly wrote to me. And I certainly played a part in talking to Bill Deakin. I mean, no doubt. Yes. I know.
It was a very brilliant idea. He wanted yes. to take undergraduate degree, but for an elderly man to go to an undergraduate college was stupid.
Yes.
St. Anthony's was a star.
Perfectly suitable. And I knew about him. I knew about his relation to Yitzhak Sadeh, but I heard nothing about him directly. So I realized he was a brilliant soldier who wouldn't take time off simply to educate himself. That's what he said. He said he felt he knew nothing, he was a barbarian, and he wanted to learn these things. And he always talked about me as his teacher, which I never for a moment was. Never. It was just a brahala vatala. It was a compliment which I appreciated, which was not founded. And in fact, then he came to St. Anthony's. I saw him here. I don't know how much I saw him, but I saw him. He used to come to lunch with me in Shoals Hills. When did he come here? 50-something.
50 or 51.
Thereabouts.
By the end of 50.
In that case, I must have... In that case, I met him in Israel in 47. Because I don't think I was in Israel before that. I didn't go in 49.
And you saw him before he came to England. That you are sure of?
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. Oh, no, no. In Genosar.
In Genosar?
Yes. Not in Jerusalem. Daddy took me... Daddy took me to his own kibbutz. What's it?
Engev.
En route... Who went to Genosar? Said, why? You wouldn't believe, because it's improbable.
No, it's not improbable, but...
They were not our friends.
They were not that close.
I think at that time they perhaps were more, you might think. And then I went... Who? Egal, no. I went to see him also, I went to Seder in Genosar.
Yes,
that much later, yes. That must be with Aline.
That I remember.
In the 50s. In the 50s.
We'll come to
it. With Seder, yes. Well, then he came here, and he went to lectures, and he, I don't know who taught him or with whom he worked. But I had nothing to do with him professionally. He may have got my lectures. That I couldn't, no doubt. At that time, I was not professor yet. I was I just moved to All Souls in 50, and I must have delivered lectures on various topics to which he came. And I used to see him from time to time. I liked him very much, and he used to see socialist leaders here. He saw Crossman, he saw Nairn Bevan, and Crossman too.
Yes, Crossman.
Crossman liked him very much.
Oh, yes, but
Bevan was the friend, Bevan, Crossman, I can't remember who else he might have seen.
Oh, he saw many of them.
Many of them.
He knew all
the Labour Party. The Labour Party.
Yes, but Bevan was...
His particular hero.
He even tried to imitate his in politics. He tried to develop a political concept in a Bevanite...
Bevanite way, oh, yes.
Bevan came to see him in Israel.
Yes. Bevan came to Israel.
Oh, yes.
What, once or more once?
I remember once.
Jenny Lee, etc.
Jenny Lee and
yes, and Michael Foot.
Even came specially to Devon's funeral.
Quite. Jenny Lee and he must have been Michael Foot.
Michael Foot and everybody.
I'm just wondering who they were.
Baba then, Russell and
Power Council.
They didn't like each other.
No, no. She didn't like Israel either. Barbara.
Later on, Harold Wilson, they were very close later.
Yes.
And,
I can imagine. No,
but there were many others.
Left wing of the Labour Party, as it then was.
The mild. I mean, the better.
Well, there was no extreme left.
Yes. George Wiggy knew well, for example. I don't know why.
He was an ally. Oh, he was afraid of Bevan.
Yes, George,
he was. Certainly. Otherwise, Goodman would not have had his present career. He created it. It's a paradox, but it's true. He was a horrible man, George Wigg. Horrible man. He really was.
I met him.
Awful.
I interviewed him.
Awful. But an interesting pro-Zionist. That's the left wing. There was nothing left of them. Communism didn't exist.
I'm sure that he had some relations with the center too. I mean, with Gaitskell and the others. But Bevan was the first.
Yeah, I understand. All right. Then after he stayed in Oxford for
2 years. And then he was brought to Israel back to do a very constructive political thing, to split Mapam.
That's right. To split Mapam. I remember when he had to go back. He told me about this. He talked to me about it, and he said he didn't want to leave, but he had a political duty. With direct kind, and it had to be done to save the Labour Party, save Israel, etc., all of which I understood. Then I saw him every time I went to Israel.
I remember.
Without exception.
Once or twice, with I you. Remember being invited.
You know, no, of course, yes.
And I remember particularly one...
I never came to Israel without seeing him. Never. I always got on extremely well with him when he was Minister of Education. He was very amusing. But everybody was asking for universities, more and more universities. He succeeded.
Then he came back to Oxford in 1960 to another
spell.
He stayed a year or so in St. Anthony's and again was called to become a minister.
Quite.
And you would meet them. I mean, when he came, either to the funeral of Bevan, or I think you invited him, and Stuart was here, I don't know who else, and he brought me with him. I think maybe that was the first time I met you here.
Perfectly possible.
No, we met in Israel before.
Quite. Perfectly possible.
And he felt very much at home here.
Yes, he did. In this house, particularly.
Yes, he felt at home.
In this house. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Our relations were very natural and perfectly easy. And I liked talking to him. He liked talking to me. He used to call me Ben Amotz, which for some reason was a tremendous joke. Right. You see? And so on, Ben Amotz. Always the jokes about Ben Amotz, all right? and so on. And we used to talk about Ben Gurion. We used to talk about Weizmann. He talked very freely about everybody. And about the party and about relations with Russia and communism and all this. Otherwise, I really have nothing to tell you. I remain friendly until the end. I think I was in Jerusalem maybe when he died.
I think I was,
you know.
I think you were, but it was very... There was snow and...
It's that terrible winter. Yeah. Well, I couldn't move. I couldn't move in Jerusalem even. But I couldn't walk. I was... immured. I was completely confined to the King David. I walked, and I remember there was that snow and ice and everything. And I couldn't move about.
Now, I mean...
And Herbert couldn't move about.
Was he a personality? Or was he for you a stereotype of a certain kind?
No. He was not a stereotype.
He was a personality.
No, he was a personality. What did I think about him? He was obviously imaginative. He was brave. He was full of vitality. Let me know that. He was a politician. Deeply. Through and through. He was gay. He was very cozy. The two qualities I like best in the world are gaiety and coziness, which he combined. That's why we got on so naturally. I never quite knew where he stood, nor did he. I had the impression that he moved with the wind. He didn't stand as a kind of pillar of some kind who had absolutely consistent ideas that you knew exactly where you were. He moved with circumstances, but as far as I know, nobody ever accused him of unjustified opportunism. Exactly. Quite so.
By the way, he was wrong in his judgment. He should have gone with Ben Gurion. But
could be. But at any rate, he was not opportunist. Well, perhaps a little vanity. Vanity played some part.
No. Camaraderie. It's loyalty to Galil.
Ardut Avoda. Ardut Avoda. Who were they? Galili and?
Tabenkin,
yes.
Galili and the other generals.
I met Tabenkin, as you know. I met him twice.
I think you told me once that you met him.
I met Tabenkin.
I remember when you told me. We had a very long walk in Paraji on the hills from the... And all along...
Quite.
Tabenkin.
I met Tabenkin twice. First in 47. When I was going to stay with Weizmann. He was on the same boat, which started from Marseille, I think, and went to Haifa.
Coming back from visiting the DP camps.
Very possibly. And there are various other people there who we knew. I don't know nobody introduced us. I mean, I was with my father, and he was simply coming to Palestine as such, and his brother-in-law also, and I was going to stay with Weizmann. Somehow we got into conversation with a number of people, and he talked to me, and yes, certainly. And I realized that he was a kind of dervish that I could see. He was very, very passionate, narrow, dedicated, eloquent, fiery, and got the nature of the Soviet Union completely wrong. Of that there's no doubt. It wasn't communist, and he said he wasn't. And he explained why he wasn't all that all right. But he had much friendlier feelings towards the Soviet Union than history afterwards, just because he voted. No, he hadn't voted yet. That was the general mood of large sections of MAPA at that time. I remember I had a great friend called Rachmilevich, who I think I talked to you about. He was in Israel in the end. He stayed there for a year. He was in hospital next to MAPAM. Remember, and he began talking about Stalin. And the man said, please stop telling me about Stalin. It makes me sick. I can't sleep. It depresses me too much. It's too painful to me. Don't mention that name again. Because he was pro-Stalin. And that was about the time when, I think, the Hungarian trials occurred. The Czech trials.
That was the
breaking point. Because that was when that man was arrested.
And that's why he needed Igala Long to speak MAPAM.
Speak MAPAM, exactly. Well, what happened to Czechoslovakia was, there was a man, you remember, what was his name?
Oren,
who never ceased to be pro-certain Stalinism. In spite of that, Oren, I remember.
By the way, Tabenkin had in him a strong ingredient of anarcho-syndicalism.
Oh, yes.
He really didn't accommodate with the state.
Quite so. When we went to Lebanon, we stopped in Beirut. He said, I Lebanon, Lebanon, he said, why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Hi, Lebanon, Lebanon. We are so, it's so natural we should be allies. We're allies in difficult times. Why not now? What is wrong? Why do they hate us? We have no real quarrel with the Arabs. A lot of that went on. Then I swam again in his kibbutz.
Hetchaot.
I went to see him. I think I was traveling about. I didn't know what I was doing. I liked him very much. He gave me cups of coffee. And again, foaming at the mouth a little bit, which he used to do, he began telling me about the crimes of Ben-Gurion. Mainly that, you see. And about what he... I liked him very much. Tabengi was a pure spirit. Not that he was wrong, and rather simple, and sometimes mistaken, and politically naive. But he was absolutely... He was pure-hearted, ambitious maybe, but pure-hearted, and utterly decent. Of that there's no doubt.
And you see, it's not by chance that he attracted all the best
people in Mapam, of course. And he was very...
Nelson's main envy was that Tabenkin, who, they were cousins, they were of the same quality.
No cousins.
Tabenkin managed to rally to his support
the best young people. Young people. We got on very well. I went to see Tabenkin because he asked me to go and see him. He said, Tabenkin. Okay. He sent me a message to Jerusalem and asked me to go and see him. I got on very well with him. I went to Tel Mishmar. Mishmar Emek, where I saw not Chazan, neither Chazan nor Yari.
Rentov,
with whom my relations were absolutely golden, in spite of his communism and everything else. I thought he was
the right thing of Chazan.
Who bent off? Very pro-communist. He assured me.
But let's the
others. Let's the others. He used to tell me about his close relations with Egyptian communists. That's what he used to talk about. I liked Bentov. Bentov was nothing like Tabenkin. Bentov was not pure-hearted. He was rather an intriguer.
Tabenkin was an amateur, but well-read.
Yes, yes.
Tabenkin was a kind of, the intelligentsia.
He was half...
He read German, he read French. He didn't read English.
Quite so. But he was in Russia, it was called polar intelligent, half an intelligent.
He
didn't talk about it. No, he didn't talk about it.
Yeah, but coming back to Igal.
Yes?
You knew that Igal was considered to be not only the best general in 48, but an admired, the leader admired most by our generation. Now, did you ask yourself ever why? I mean, because you didn't find him such charismatic or...
No, I didn't. Simply, I could see that he had a certain power of inspiring people. The vitality, the sincerity, and the idealism were very strong. You see, by the time he was Minister of Education, it had slightly died away. By that time, he was just a member of the cabinet.
Yeah, now I'm thinking about the early 50s.
There, of course. No, he was a kind of young lion. I could see that. I could see why. Certainly I met nobody else. Like that I knew Yitzhak Sadeh very well. Yitzhak Sadeh was an adventurer. You needn't tell me about him. Him I knew very, very well. I mean, he was not a Zionist, he was not much of a Jew. I mean, he was splendid, but that's another matter. Fascinating, and splendid, and wonderful, had remarkable qualities, but he was not a serious person in the end. It was very brave and romantic, but that's something different. Whereas he got along with something else.
Did Igal try to, from time to time,
to use your contacts for political...
Never. Never.
Did Trump to consult you on political...
Never.
Because they admired you.
Never. Never. But Israeli matters, never. We may have talked about English statesmen, people asked what I thought about them. If they have forgotten, it's unlikely you didn't. But we probably chatted, as I might chat to you, about who people were, and what they thought, and so on. But on the whole, he relied on his own judgment. On those he thought he knew.
Now, generally speaking, from your first, in 1934 when you came to Israel, did you see a kibbutz?
You went to see Jimmy Rothschild, that I remember.
Eagle.
He went to see him.
And, you know, I mean, the story was that Genosar and the Rothschild were at the odds. Genosar was the only kibbutz that was on Pika's land. And it was quite an event for a member of a kibbutz to come to visit Jimmy Rothschild. But Yigal alone being a general...
Quite. No, I told you, Jimmy Rothschild, about him. I prepared it.
Jimmy apparently liked...
I prepared it.
But Jimmy asked him, so Yigal says, come and see me again. Yigal told him, I'll come to see you in a year time after I'll be able to speak English. I mean, it was... And apparently they met several times, I don't know. Then, of course, Dolly helped him in the Open University and the other. All right. No, but coming back to 1934, did you visit the kibbutz then?
In?
Did you visit the kibbutz?
When? In 1934? Yes, certainly. Certainly.
You remember?
I went around with John Foster. We were taken around by Yoshua, what's his name?
Yoshua...
A kind of... guys,
Joshua Gordon.
That's right. He was attached to John Foster, important Englishman. Who I was, he had no idea. Nor was I anybody. But anyway, I took his round. We certainly went. We went to in Harod, maybe yes. I'll tell you why I met on that occasion. On that occasion, the people I remember meeting were. What's her name? Manya...
Manya Shochat?
Shochat, right?
But she's not a member of Emparot. She was from Kfar Giladi.
In Kfar Giladi? I went to Kfar Giladi.
For you to meet Manya Shochat, she was fascinating.
Well, it was very fascinating. It was. Manya Vilbushevich was her name.
It's a mine gold.
Of course, of course. Of course, gold mine. We didn't talk about Odessa and the chief police. And her own mysterious relationship. We talk about Weizmann. She described her journey to Palestine with him before the war. But she was an old lady by then. And 34 years. She was quite old. And
she looked older than she was.
Perhaps.
But she was not
perhaps. But I could see that she was an old-fashioned Russian revolutionary type. Exactly what they were like. I didn't take so much interest at that time in Russian matters. You see what I mean? I was an Oxford philosopher. I was an Oxford philosopher in All Souls. You see, we didn't talk about 1905 or 1979. But I was impressed by her. She was a real tough lady. Rather like the same stamp as Ben Tzvi's wife. I know. That was the pretty hard types. They did not quail for murder or anything like that. They knew what they had to do. They were educated in a tough school. And they knew what was what. They had firm ideals and quite ruthless. Not unscrupulous, but ruthless. Except that Manya Shochat tended to lecture one a little bit. Tended to moralize. Whom I went.
Russian,
yes, sure.
Now.
No, in Hebrew too. such as what is. She talked Hebrew. I did talk Russian a bit, but she insisted on always going back. Didn't want to talk Russian. Didn't want to. And then I went in Karol too. I can't remember when you're done. Probably nobody I knew. I want to see what kibbutzim. Kibbutzim I went to.
Yes. Now, did you stay in a kibbutz at that time for overnight? Or
no.
No. Now, no. Then you went to Gemasar Yisroigal, you went to several times, and you went once to a seder with Igal.
That was much later. But that's not. I went to this kibbutzim without John Foster. He had gone. So after, with him I went to Jerusalem. The first thing we did was to go, I think I told you, police sports. Am I telling you that story? I will. We arrived. In 1984, I met John Foster in Salzburg. No, yes, we were to Venice. From Venice we took a boat to Alexandria. In Alexandria we got off. And then we went and stayed night to Alexandria, Cairo. And then we took the ferry across the Suez Canal and got into a train. And suddenly I realized we were passing Sinai, then we passed El Arish, all this. And then I realized I was about to enter Palestine. I've never been so moved in my life as on that occasion. That's undoubtedly true. The very idea of, then a Jewish ticket collector came to the train. That, curiously enough, made a tremendous impression on me. I almost cried. I suddenly realized this was it. There was a Jewish establishment. Where some kind of independent Jewish political life existed. Well, I was a lifelong Zionist, you know, and that moved me beyond words. So, John Foster didn't quite understand all this. And I didn't really tell him. But he saw that it made a sort of... And people virtually did cry, I think. Then we arrived in Jerusalem in the morning. In the late morning, I went to see my uncle and aunt, Samunov. We stayed at the King David Hotel, which was then served by various Nubian waiters and black Nubian waiters in long white shirts, remember? The hotel belonged to a company with Mr. Frank Goldsmith, who was the head of his room, friend of Jimmy's. Jimmy's greatest friend was the owner. And then, after that, I walked about Jerusalem in a dazed state. I was absolutely moved beyond anything. It really was absolutely wonderful. Then I went with John Foster. Moved. I didn't say, not euphoria. Not euphoria, but I suddenly felt, this is it. They've done it. It exists. Something absolutely brand new here. This is what we worked for. That's what we're talking about. True, I've seen photographs of it. People, yes. Zionist Lechim talked about it. It wasn't the same. All these Arabs. And then, of course, I met various British persons on that occasion. I remember meeting Perron. I remember meeting Hughes. I remember meeting the man of the intelligence. What's his name? The chief intelligence officer. His name was... Not Colville, but Lackville. Something I knew.
Ah, Donville.
Donville, yes.
Donville was there.
He was there, yes. Yes. I met him. And then I went to John Foster. And then I went with Donville and Perron to see the father of my pupil, and Taji El-Farouki, who was an undergraduate at New College, whom I taught. And the father was Effendi, living in... what was the Arab name of Nes Ziona? Next door, to Nes Ziona. It was called... he was called...
Wadi something. I know what he
means. Wadi something, no doubt. Because we had lunch there, and so on. I remember very well that the translator from English to Arabic said to him, he says he's but me. He's a very important man. But what I said was, look, I'm not the most important person teaching our son. Above me, there is another tutor, and above him, there's the head of college. The translator said, apparently, he says he's important. There is a man who is more important than he. There's another man who is more important still. He went in that order. He was called Shukri Bey. Yes, he had large estates. Ultimately, he went to Egypt. His son was very mild. He was not a... He was a conservative Arab. Who would not... And then had no PLO-ish qualities whatever. Not a friend of the Mufti or anything like that. Not at all. Shukri Bey al-Faruqi, I think. Taji was my pupil, who kept on sending me fruit, because he thought...
House on the top of the hill, above Netziona.
Very likely. Very likely. I've forgotten what it's called.
Yes, sir.
And the British official was very pleased to take me there, actually. And I then realized what the atmosphere was. Then, John Foster and I went to Jordan, Transjordan. We stayed in Jerash. We stayed a night. I spent the night on an inscription. The Emperor Trajan, I think, was during a certain year.
In
Jerash.
In Jerash.
Or No. The other people had beds in the hotel. There was no bed for me because it seized them. So it was a warm evening. It was summer. It was August. So I spent the night on my back with a very hard stone inscription. Some kind of tomb. I remember the letters cut themselves to my back. It said that the emperor, either Hadrian or Trajan, had been there 123, whenever it was. Tommy Hodgkin came with us. He was at that time secretary to... But nobody knew he was a communist. I didn't know it. He certainly was. Member of the party, certainly. Still, he was an old friend from England. I told you that last time, I think, about Portofino and all that.
Yes.
Now, what happened then was that I went with John Foster to Jordan. We looked at Amman. We did not go to Petronim. That's too far away. Too hot and so on. But we went to Syria. We went to Damascus, where I saw the Umayyad Mosque, that kind of thing. Interesting, and then from there to Lebanon. From there we went to Aleh, above Beirut, on Yom Kippur, when a certain number of Israelis were seen by me hiding there. Like, for example, one of the Supreme Court justices, what's his name, the father of Mrs. Zmoira Cohen, Zmoira.
Yes.
He was there in Aleh with two other important Israelis, women officials, in order to escape Yom Kippur. That amused me. Then we came down by that marvelous road which goes from Beirut to Haifa, which is no longer its one, through whatever it was. Bin Yaqub was in the museum. And then he left, Foster. I stayed longer. I stayed on, that's why I met Stern on the way back. I told you that story.
Yes.
And came back to Jerusalem. I don't know where I stayed, I think probably King David again. And it was then that I did my little tour with Joshua. Gordon was already with Foster. But I then went on and saw various people. That's when I must have met... I was about to tell you. First thing which had happened to in Jerusalem when I came with Foster, first man we met was the director of education, whose assistant was Khalidi, the brother of the mayor. And I thought he was one of the most awful men I ever knew, the Arab. Awful men. Horrible Khalidi, the father of the prison professor. What? Cunning. intelligent, not nice, flattered the British officials to such a gross degree that I really was nauseated. Now his chief, who was Englishman, was a terrific anti-Semite.
Bowman.
Very nasty fellow, I thought. I didn't like either of them. We then met the director of immigration, who was a very cynical, tired old Englishman, who was rather pro-Jewish. Mills. Eric Mills. He was tired, old, he didn't really mind. He was more amused by the Jews than by the Arabs. Perrone, of course, was very pro-Arab. Domville, inclined towards the Jews, to some extent. Intelligent, exactly. And you're going, so exactly why.
You realized it then already?
Even then, yes. He more or less explained it. And
that actually when our intelligence relations started.
Quite. That's when I met, what's his name, Zaslani.
Yes, Zaslani was the man
who... Exactly. In 34.
You met Zaslani?
Yes, yes. How, why, I cannot tell you. But I did. I did. And then, certainly, I must admit, that's when I met Scholem with Roth, with Leon Roth, who gave a party for me. So I knew him. And that's when I met Shmuel Levin, too. 34. So I had quite a good time. Whom else would I have met then? I must meet professors at the university. Not the president, not Magnus, no. And I was prejudiced against Magnus anyway. But Weizmann, of course, hated him. But I didn't then know Weizmann. It wasn't that. No, it has not been Magnus, nor did anyone suggest it. Maybe. Yes, I knew him afterwards, a bit. Hugo Bergman, yes. Fekete with the mathematics. Banette, who was an Oriental scholar, was an Arabic scholar, whose sister in London I knew very well. She was called Mrs. Snowman. Her husband was my father's solicitor, given Berlin. Very nice man. Rather saintly. Saintly. Very nice indeed. Who I met a number of people at the university. And that's when they asked me, was it really true about Victor Rothschild and the roadhouse? Do you remember the story? Let me tell you. Roadhouses have gone out of existence. There were the British, there were restaurants with hotels along the side of motor roads. You could eat dinner there and you could stay the night. The same exists, but they're no longer called roadhouses. Victor, who was then at Cambridge, tried to spend the night in the roadhouse, but when he wrote his name down, he said, are you a Jew? He said, yes. We're not going to let him stay for the night. 34. Well, he got into a state of great fury and typically bought it. Could prove nothing. Just a normal joke. And now the man sacked the staff, sacked the man. That's good, typical great man behavior. Presumably bought it. Presumably got rid of it in the end. But that was that got the papers. So people there said, is it really true? Everybody knew the story in Jerusalem. It got all the papers. In England, such a thing. Lord Rothschild. You see, I remember being asked in the university by various people, one or two professors, who nervously asked me if this could be true. I had to explain to them. And there was quite a lot of conservatives in England at that time, as today is. Now, then who else did I see?
The Bentuses?
Not in Israel, I didn't think. I knew them very well, but not they were always stayed in Arab Hotel when they were in Jerusalem.
In summer they were in England.
No, but they always stayed in Arab Hotel after when they came, after they retired. Was he in Jerusalem in 34? Was he Attorney General?
No, he was
then?
Not. He was professor at the university.
Already in 34? But what name?
Joseph was his younger brother.
Who?
Joseph, thank you.
Ah, yes. I met him much later. After the war. Yes.
Now,
he was extremely eccentric. Not extremely, but still. As you know, he refused the fellowship of Trinity College, Cambridge, because he didn't believe in inequality.
I didn't know that he refused.
Yeah. Harvard, he was a mathematician.
Pardon?
He was a mathematician.
Joseph?
I think so. Or classics. Or classics.
But he was the head of the education department.
That's nothing to do with it, you see. He would not accept a fellowship. I think mathematics.
Because
he was a brilliant mathematician. Maybe a classical scholar as well. But he didn't believe in inequality between dons and students.
That's very nice. When he retired, he went to live in a kibbutz.
Very typical. And Bentridge was very proud of, particularly after he was shot. After he was shot, Bentridge had to show how friendly he and his wife always stayed in Arab hotels in Jerusalem. Very deliberately.
It's not normal because of his wife. His wife was very anti-Zionist.
Surely.
She never came to Israel. She was in the London.
She stayed in Israel, yes. She came.
But only to visit.
Yes, only to visit.
She was active here.
No, no. LCC. LCC, it was called. Quite right. She was a Franklin.
She was a Franklin.
Yes. She was a cousin of Samuel. Of the Abbot. No. I never met Kish. Colonel Kish, never met him. I don't think he was about by then.
No, he was not. Yes, right. Sharet succeeded him. Now, I want to go back to your impression.
Did I meet Sharet now?
No, I mean, that was already too
political. Not then.
But I wanted to ask you, what was your
impression? I stayed with Tommy Hodgkin in the Austrian hospice in Jerusalem. We went for a ride on donkeys, he and I. We came back on Friday afternoon and were stoned by the pious Jews of Jerusalem. That I remember. And I realized that Tommy Hodgkin was violently anti-Zionist. In a communist way, but so he was. No, that's not it.
No, but I want to come back to the question, generally speaking, since then until your last visit to Kibbutz.
Yep.
What was your impression of the Kibbutz?
They are very different from each other.
Pardon?
I was entirely favorable. It was impossible not to be. The Kibbutz made very, very touching impression on me. I thought the people I met there were extremely nice people. I thought their life was a perfectly honorable life. I had never met anybody in a Kibbutz or from a Kibbutz whom I've disliked.
To this day?
To this, well, perhaps I didn't know they came from Kibbutz if I didn't like them. Mm-hmm. You see? I'm trying to think. Some people are nicer than others.
Yeah, sure.
That's
very interesting.
Who was the man who I didn't? There was a man called Ilan Amitsur. He's always writing me letters. He wants to drop some in Jewish history somewhere. In England now.
He's now in Durban.
Now in?
Durban, South Africa.
Durban, yes.
Unfortunately, you see, he had to leave the kibbutz.
Because?
He was with the kibbutz. And, I mean, when one in his age leaves the kibbutz, he has no means, so he has to accumulate some money.
Well, I was always very nice to him. And I wrote testimonials for him. And he's a hard-working and useful man. His books are useful books. I didn't like him terribly. Quite. But still, and he is the only man I can think of from a kibbutz who is an exception to this rule.
Probably among the politicians.
I don't even know.
From the kibbutz, there are some whom you like, some you not less. But yes. Generally speaking, human nature.
Which politicians come from kibbutz even now, or before? I could have known. Ben Gurion never was in the kibbutz.
I mean, Chazan, Yaari, Bentov.
Never met them. I never met Bentov. Bentov, yes. to thank you, yes. I never met Yari. I never met Galili.
You never met Galili. Can you call it?
I know. That's all right.
But he is not typical kibbutz politician.
He must have been once. Yeah. When he was very young.
Yeah. Ehud Avriel, you knew.
Avriel was a kibbutz. Pretty tough.
And a devotee.
And a devotee. I liked
Avriel. Was a very complicated
pretty tough.
Very interesting.
Tough and complicated.
Full of contradictions.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
But...
Last time I saw Avriel was when in Rome, at the airport, when he said, what was it? We have to be stare. Well, not be stare,